It's always, you know, for those of us that lived and ministered in a place like Belize, it's so encouraging to hear this stuff and to hear all of the different experiences. Of course, we've experienced it all ourselves. When you live in the situation, it's one thing to go down for a journey like this when you know that regardless of how difficult it is, there's a point just a few days ahead of you that you've got to get to get out of there, to get back to sanity. And so you know there's that mindset that I can deal with this for a week or 10 days or whatever it turns out to be. It's quite different when you actually live there. You have to, you know, you just make up your mind, this is where God has called you to do, and basically whatever comes your way, you're just going to have to deal with it. And that's one of the really interesting things about the mission field and God's call in your life. But as I've said so many times in the past, these people can testify, and all those that have gone before the teams, that is, have gone down. Well, you know, you've heard the testimony repeatedly about what an amazing thing it is to be involved in what God is doing in the world. And one of the coolest things for us, as I know you guys have heard me share like 100 times, you know, all that God asked us to basically give up and set aside here, He more than blessed us with in our time there. And I won't embarrass her, but Zelda, I got a new daughter. Marie and I got a new daughter. Another Father's Day card. Huh? What's wrong with that? This is what happens. This is the things that God does, and so it's about the people, and you just sort of get beyond the bugs and the heat and the humidity and the conditions. And when we were there, was much earlier on, obviously, the power situation was on, it was off. We didn't have water at times. It was just you just had to learn to deal with it. It's just the way that it was, but. It was always and will continue to be for Marie and I, and I heard Liz say it as well, and I know Trav, and I'm sure Juan and Karen would agree. It's home. It just is. I don't know how to explain it to you, but that 5 years that we lived there, the place just became so much a part of us that it still feels home. I mean, I'm not saying Mesquite's not home. Don't misunderstand. But when we go there, it's like returning home. It's the strangest thing. But it is about the people and the family and getting to go to Pastor Jose's and Justa's and Gids and Maylin's and lots of other folks and getting to experience life. And it's a real blessing for them to do this. And by the way, Tom, when they served me a chicken foot, I put it back. I don't know where he went. Okay. I see where chickens walk. I ain't eating that. The same with pig feet. No. I don't care how clean you make it. Besides that, if you end up with a steady diet of chicken feet, you end up being skinny like that because there ain't nothing to these things, as Tom testified. Have never bitten into a habanero pepper. Smart enough to recognize it from the chicken, personally. Just saying. But anyway, all of those things are just, those are the great memories that you have. But for us, it will always be the people. I was watching the video there, and I don't know if you noticed there was a couple of girls in there that you probably don't recognize, and I know I shared a little bit with you. The one girl that was there was Stephanie. She was one of the first staff members that we had the very first year we were there. We had gotten there really just, I want to say, really weeks before Steph and the other girls, Marilee and Rochelle and some of these other girls. We had gotten there just before them, and so we were brand new to the country, just like they were, trying to figure this out. But they came down after they got out of high school. Some of them had gone to the Calvary Chapel Bible College, and we had decided to come down and to minister. And Stephanie was one of those. And Stephanie is like all the girls. This is not just about her. I could name them all. It's not necessary for you to know. But Stephanie was one that was one of those that at the nights and everybody was away from the family, and we would be in the home, and we didn't even have DVDs at that point. All we had was old VCRs, and people would send us the VCRs. And so at our house, sort of, we became mom and dad, as you can imagine. And all these girls would come over in there. Now, I'm not kidding you not. It's 90 degrees, 100 degrees, it's 85% humidity, and they come over in slippers and pajamas. Come to find out, it had nothing to do with the cold. It was to keep the critters off of them. But anyway, they'd all come and just crash out on our floor, and we'd watch videos and stuff, and that's kind of the way it was. But with Steph, I was immediately reminded, especially there was a picture, and I think it was Jules jumping off the cliffs there. I don't know if you guys saw that picture of the waterfall. We used to go out to that place. We knew it as Santa Elena Falls. I think it's different. What is it, Rio Blanco now? Something. Anyway, but we used to go out there, and so we had already been out there, and so we took these girls, this whole host of girls. There was, I don't know, 7 or 8 of them, and we went out there, and this is just, I'm not kidding you. It is absolutely breathtakingly beautiful. In fact, the teams that would come from Louisiana down to us, they called it the Garden of Eden. But there's this big cliff, and you can see it's about a 30-foot drop down to the water from the higher section. And so we would jump off into this pool that's probably a little bit bigger than this room here. And it's deep enough that none of us were ever able to touch the bottom. So, I mean, it's pretty deep. We don't know how deep it is because... I've never known anybody that got down there. The Belizeans don't like going to there because they think there's things living down there. They're probably right. But anyway, but we were jumping out there at the water, and this was the time the girls came out there, and they were all swimming around out there. You know, now this is Belize, so there's stuff floating on the water that, you know, just stuff, just floating around out there. So I'm happened to be, you know, I jump off the cliff or whatever, and I'm swimming around, and as I'm swimming, there was these little... they're a seed pod, actually, that come out of a tree, but they're about, let's say the size of a quarter. They're kind of beige with the seed in the center, and they're floating on this water. And so we were pretty new to the situation ourselves, and as we're swimming around out there, I sort of stop and kind of dog paddling, and one of these things has attached itself to my hand. It's just, you know, it stuck to my hand. It wasn't doing anything. I just brought it up out of the water, and it stuck on my hand. And at first, when I looked at it, I was like, yeah! And I'm like, okay, it's a seed, relax. But I'm thinking... oh, I'm going to have fun with this. So I get this one, and the girls, they're all sort of over off to the side, on the opposite side of the big cliff that you jump off. They're all over there, you know, kind of laying up there and stuff like this. There's this whole big circle of them. And so I go swimming over there real quiet-like, and I get over there. And as I get into the girls, and I'm like, so girls, how you doing? Isn't this place awesome? Da, 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 da. And so I sort of, while I'm talking to them, sort of distracting them, I put this thing back on my hand where I'd seen it. And so I bring my hand up out of the water, and I look at it, and I go, something's on my hand. And they go, what? And then I go, ah! I start screaming, kicking, flailing in the water. I thought those girls were gonna kill me. They screamed like mash cats for like 10 minutes, and it took me forever to get them convinced that I was just joking. They thought the thing was like bored into my skin and gonna, you know, grow roots into my brain. My eyes are gonna pop out. I don't know. They were screaming and freaking out, and I'm like, it's okay. I was just joking. It was not a good thing to do. They were not happy with me for some time, to say the least. Anyway, so that was one of those with Stephanie. And so it was, and I saw that and saw that thing. I'm thinking, I got to tell that story. But it's, you know, it is amazing. Poor Stephanie is the one that we heard her crying one morning. She wasn't screaming or anything. Went over there, and the long and the short of it was a mother scorpion had gotten into, she was wearing a poncho. We told her, you're nuts wearing that poncho. It's too dang hot. Get wet. It's better than sweating underneath. So she had taken this poncho out of her, it's not really a closet, we use them as closets, but this poncho out to put on to go, because she was walking up to the school. You saw the path there. When we were there, it was all covered with bush. It was like a tunnel cut through. And so she had put on this poncho, and a mama scorpion had gotten in there and had, the babies had crawled all over this poncho. I mean, little tiny little scorpions. I mean, I'm serious. There must have been 80 of these things in there. And she put that thing on, and they stung her all over the place. Poor thing. But yeah, who wants to go to Belize? But anyway, so it was just a really neat deal. But the concept of the, you know, what I'm trying to communicate to you is the blessing. And the people that you make these journeys with will always be special to you, because you've experienced something besides the norm. Whether it's, you know, whether it's challenging or difficult, or, you know, or even just, you know, fun, having, you know, eat your own bug. That's a pretty cool way to look at it. But it's that concept of family that really makes it all worthwhile. And for Marie and I, as it started off with us, and like I said, to these girls, I would think, I mean, I haven't talked to them in some time. We were an extension, mom and dad. It was father, and it was neat to be down there with them and especially celebrate Father's Day. And so I actually had a message that I was going to go back into the book of Acts, but after talking about all of this and these guys stealing like 90% of my time, what I'll do is I wanted to share something. That's why I raced out of here to go over and get something to put together. So it's going to be a little bit more jumbled than normal, but yeah, as if that's a new development, right? But I got to thinking about this, and I thought how great it was for that experience for us. We have a family. God asked us to leave that family here to journey down there where he broadened our family. My daughter's sitting right here. And in the relationships that we have with all of these wonderful people who are so much a part of who we are. And you start to think about this, and you start to roll this around, especially on a day like today, where you start to think about Father's Day, and you start thinking, you know, where does this concept originate? Now, we obviously know, the father, has children along with a mom. If you're not sure about that, we can talk after the service. But so it's not just about the father, but today is focused on the fathers. And so you get this whole concept. But where does this originate from? I mean, obviously you can procreate. Well, animals do that, but they're not fathers. You know, actually they're not. They don't become dads. But you get the idea. So I was thinking about this and really sort of contemplating this concept of fatherhood. And I was reminded of Jesus's words himself. And if you remember correctly, towards the end there, when his ministry was just about complete, the apostles came to him and they asked him a question and they said, "Lord, teach us to pray." Do you remember that? Now, these were people that were raised in Judaism. They had gone to synagogue all their life. They were familiar with the Tanakh. They were familiar with the Torah. They were familiar with all of the stuff and being, what it meant to be a Jew, what it meant to be the people, the chosen people of God. They all knew this. And so when you stop and think about the concept that at this point in their life and their walk with the Lord and his ministry on earth, that they would ask this question implies that they understood that their prayers were something that were not ultimately, I mean, they were just prayers. There wasn't a personality. So they're saying to him, "Listen, teach us to pray." Now, the Lord's response to that is, of course, what we call today the Our Father. The Lord's Prayer. This was his response. And what he was saying to them is, when you pray, this is what you do. In fact, that's exactly what he said. But I find it interesting because we'll focus on all of the rest of the prayer. But the thing that's always, ever since I remember this as a child growing up in the church that I was involved in, and every time we would do the Lord's Prayer and everybody would talk about lead me not into temptation and, and hallowed be thy name and all that. And those are wonderful things. But the thing that always, from as far back as I can remember, that always jumped out at me from the Lord's Prayer are the first two words: Our Father. Now, for you and I, we live in New Testament times. These guys, New Testament times hadn't started yet because Jesus was still with them. So this was an absolute stunner to them. Because to them, we're talking Yahweh, Adonai. You're talking Elohim. You're talking about the God of Israel. And Jesus, after asking him to pray, takes it to this personal level of Our Father. So he makes it immediately, the first two words out of his mouth, before anything else is said, he draws the attention to this relationship of God, between God and us who are offering our words of prayer. And there's immediate intimacy that's involved in that. But it's not just intimate in the sense of one friend to another. We're talking about an intimacy that comes from when you say Our Father and Pater, and it can actually be translated into a much softer, like a daddy, sort of like Abba, which we're going to get to here in just a minute. Because, father, anybody can be a father, but it takes someone special to be a dad. Never forget that. Dogs can be fathers. Okay, but anyway, so this whole concept, this is the first two words out of his mouth. And I remember thinking that, and I'm thinking, wow, that's really significant to me, because I had this, and I'm assuming he would agree with me, a wonderful relationship with my dad. He's very strict now, don't make no mistake about it. But it was a great relationship. So the minute I saw those words, it put me in the context of this relationship that I had with my dad. And that I knew that he loved me. And I knew that he loved me enough to discipline me. And this was the days when, you guys will remember this, we had to drop our drawers, me and Jeffy, and bend over. I could show you the scars, but you're probably not interested in seeing it. No, I'm just kidding. But he'd take the belt to us. That's the way that it was. I'm not scarred emotionally. Amen. Well, some would argue that point, but you get the idea. I don't walk with a twitch. I mean, come on. I knew that don't do this, because if you do this, this is what's waiting for you. And guess what it did? It kept me from doing an awful lot of things. Just saying. But anyway, but so when that concept, it brought me into, it immediately took me to this wonderful relationship that I had with my dad, even as a disciplinarian. But he was the strength. He was the power of our family. He was the provider, the protector. He was all of these things. I mean, I wasn't taught this. He just lived this. And I understood it. I embraced it. And I know my brother did as well. And So I was thinking about this with the Lord's Prayer, and I'm thinking, wow, that's a completely different way to look at God, isn't it? It really changes the perspective on that. And then, of course, when I became a father, and I've shared this with my kids, and they all know this, that this whole thing developed to where I started to really think about that, and the fatherhood of God became very special to me. Something that was really important. And because of my relationship with my dad, as well as my heavenly father, you know, I wanted to be the best father I could be. Now, not so good, obviously. Could have done some things differently. But what was interesting about that is as I grew and of course, was called into the ministry and sort of started contemplating all of this, I started to get this different perspective of God. And I got to think, what a unique privilege it is for us to be able to call him God. Do you realize that not even the angels can call him Father? Do you understand that? Gabriel doesn't call him Father. Michael doesn't call him Father. That's me. I get to call him Father. You get to call him Father. That's amazing when you stop and think about it. Nothing else, and I mean nothing in all of creation, has the right nor the privilege to refer to God, the Creator, as Father, except those who have come to him in faith. But as many as received him, that is God, to them he gave the power to become the sons of God. Of course, daughters as well. Do you understand what we're saying here, what that means? That is absolutely amazing. And so I began to understand this and this unique relationship that I had in light of all of creation. And I mean, I'm concluding everything. And I got to thinking about this and I thought, you know, it's unique like that even in our family. I had four, but now I have five. There are five people in this world, only five, that can look to me and call me dad. Only five. Everybody else knows me from different perspectives, but those five get to have a unique relationship with me, and of course, their mom as well, but this is Father's Day, so we got to do the Father's Day thing. And I got a sucker, just so you know. Marie's kept keeping it for me, or at least she better be keeping it for me, because I didn't get a rose from Mother's Day. But anyway, so I just thought that was just this unique thing. And you know, this is there's so much to this, because I remember as a son to my father making just, you guys know, the dumbest mistakes. And it was one of those things that you knew you were busted and you knew it was going to cost you dearly. And you knew that, and of course, my dad would get angry. God doesn't get angry, but I knew that he'd be angry. But you know what I never doubted? That his love for me was unfailing and unchanging. I get that as a pastor now, but at the time, I couldn't have defined that for you, but I knew it to be true. I knew that my dad, no matter what happened, no matter how angry I had made him, how deeply I had disappointed him, I knew that his love for me would never change. And that if I found myself distant from him, it would be I that had created the distance and not vice versa. So when I became a believer and this just transferred to God, this was stunning to me. And that's why I wanted to share it with you. So this concept of Father's Day, where does this originate from? Now, I'm going to just do a little thing here. not to dazzle you, but to show you how cool this is. I didn't have time to set it up because, like I said, I raced over there literally, was hoping I was going to get back. Thank God Juliana's story was longer and I had time. Just kidding. But I got over there and got this done. So I didn't have time to set this up, but I want you to see this. Oops, not clicking. Go ahead. Yeah, that's pretty much, we're going to go there and one more click if I don't have it here. Don't worry about it. What I want to show you here, again, this is out of order, but just to show you. I want you to look, first of all, to see this. Okay, this right here, right there, for those of you on this side, notice I'm a switch hitter. Did you catch that? I can go from both sides of the plate. Anyway, that's what we call today modern or biblical Hebrew. That's what it looks like. This is two letters. And I don't know why that sign thing's showing up, maybe on that computer. But anyway, that thing that looks like an X, remember you read right to left in Hebrew. But this is what's called the Aleph, okay? It's their letter A, okay? Now, in the Hebrew language, a letter is not just a letter. Like, we have a letter A. It's an A. That's what it is. But their letter is a word, Aleph. Did you get that? Okay? So in the Hebrew language, it doesn't just represent a letter. It represents a word, and each letter of that word represents something else. Does that make sense? And so there's all of these different meanings that come into play with that. But what you've got here is you've got this Aleph, that's the A. Okay, that's a vowel, don't worry about that. And this is the letter Bet, or Vet, depends on if you're from Germany or from Israel. But anyway, and so that's what it looks like today. If you see those two letters, you're looking at the pronunciation of Ab or Av. Okay, that's how you would say that. Now this should bring you back to what I just said. Do you remember Paul in the New Testament twice says, our relationship is such with God, with the Father, that we can call him Abba, right? You're familiar with that term. That's where it comes from. This is the Hebrew, that's Aramaic. Abba is Father in Aramaic, but in Hebrew it's Ab or Av, okay? So this writing here that we always think is, and we even will call this ancient Hebrew, but that's not really correct. This type of lettering here, do I need to switch? Can everybody just look at one side because I'm really getting dizzy here? which happens a lot. Anyway, so this is what we call the modern or the square script. That actually was developed by Ezra the prophet. Nobody knows where it originated from, but it shows up at about his time. Yes, as that Ezra from the Bible. But what it's based off of is what you see to the left of it. That's what we call pictograph. And what linguists have been able to determine now is that that writing you see, and that was taken off of, you can go online and look this up, the oldest writing ever found on this planet. It wasn't found until 1905, by the way, and it was found over in Egypt. And what you've got there, believe it or not, are two letters. What are the two letters? Well, it just so happens they match the Hebrew language. But anyway, but what you've got here, you've got Aleph, Bet. Okay? I'm going to explain this here in just a second. Now, what you can see, you can kind of see what's happened in our language. If you take this and you turn it, which happens, and you straighten those things out, and then you stand it on its head, you get our modern A. Oh. And if you take this and you straighten that out and you spin that, you've got our current letter B. It all goes back to this writing, oldest writing ever found. Now, why this is cool is because this is the Aleph Bet. Okay? So that's the Aleph. I couldn't get the slide ready in time, so I had to do the one that was combined. The Aleph, if you look at it, what it represents is the idea of strength, of power, of authority, okay? Of being of stable, something that's stable. Okay, obviously, the way they described that letter was by an ox. What is an ox? All of those things we just described. So it looks like an ox head. This is the literal ancient Hebrew. What you're looking at there, believe it or not, are the letters that Moses would have used to write the Ten Commandments. Not the stuff that we think it is. It's that. Now, we don't have time to get into all this because it's not a Hebrew lesson. It's about fathers. When you take that Aleph, which means the strength and all of that stuff, and you combine it in the Hebrew, remember we're going right to left, okay, this way. When you combine those two, you come up with the same Ab or Av, which means Father. How does this happen? Because remember, it's not just letters in the Hebrew language like it is in the English. It has much more depth, much more meaning. There's even a numerical stuff that you can put on this which will blow your mind. But anyways, so notice what this says. So when the letter Aleph, or the A, is combined with the letter Beit, it creates the word Ab or Av. The meaning of Ab is the strong or mighty one of the house, which is the father. The Beit, as you can see up there in the top left-hand corner, is the second letter of that alphabet. And it represents, I know you're saying, well, it doesn't look like any tent I've ever seen, but it represented a tent to the ancients. Because if you look at the entrance there up on the left-hand side, you've sort of got an entryway, sort of a hallway with a dividing wall, and then the living quarters are inside. So what they did is they wanted to say God, so they combined strength with that of the home, and they put the two together, and that's what they came up with, was Ab, Av. Because the father is the strength of the home. And when you really chase this down, and literally the definition of Av is the straight, strong, supporting pole. It's the center pole of the tent. Because it's the father by God's design. Now, all of us fathers haven't done such a good job at this, but by God's design, it's the father which is to support the home for the rest of the family. So this concept of father, you can see, goes way back to the concept. And this was how they began to understand the God of heaven from the Hebrew people. They would see this because, unlike you and I, which are look at everything abstractly, theirs are very concrete. They look at everything within creation and what surrounds their lives, and they take that, and this is how they view God and pretty much anything else in the world, for that matter. But this is what they do. But the reason I want to drive this home is because this concept of father, I think, is best understood with all the technology we have. When you go right back to the earliest writing ever found, it says it all. There's nothing to be added to this, nothing to be subtracted. When they heard of, they were seeing the strength, the power, the stability of the home. That's God. So they would refer to him in this sense. I find that absolutely fascinating. Because like for me, like I said, my dad was those things. He was. He was the when everything seemed to be coming unraveled in the home, I remember it was Dad that seemed to sort of, and I don't mean this in the sense of keeping a roof over our head by the money that he made. I'm talking about he kept the roof from collapsing on us as a family when there were times when it looked like it might collapse. He was the one that would stand and support the whole thing and take the weight and all the garbage that me and my brother, and sometimes my mom, that we would throw on there, and he would stand steadfast and he would hold it. So my whole point in doing this and the change in my heart as we were talking about this and tying it to Belize was this concept of Father's Day. So when you go from here and you think about that, and you call your dad, as Trav said, call your dad, I don't get along with him. Tough, get over it, call him. When you do that, this is what you need to think about, because this is what it means to be a father on Father's Day, the stability. Notice those posts and stuff, they weren't perfect, folks. They weren't set on some lathe and rounded off nice and purely and then sanded down and varnished. No, no, no. If you've ever seen a tent pole in any place other than in America, this thing is knotted, it's scarred, it's not straight. Necessarily, it's got all of this stuff. But one thing that it does do, it supports the family. It's the strength of the family. For us as fathers, we better take that to heart, because when you stand before God, our Father, he's going to hold you accountable for it. Maybe you haven't done such a good job to this point. I know that I certainly haven't. Well, it's time to change. It's time to become the father that he designed us to be and then led us by the example, which is why Jesus could say, this is how you pray, our Father. Amen? Amen. Let's stand. We'll close in a word of prayer.